You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
This would be a really good time for all of us to stand together, to lock arms, to denounce the violence, to make a commitment to the kind of changes and reforms that the people in this country are demanding, and let's work together. Wouldn't that be a message? Donald Trump and Taylor working together to help move this country forward. Why don't we try that for a change?
This is August 31st, 2020. Those are the words of the Portland mayor. We got the message. We got the message. Why don't we work together? Why don't you, Donald Trump, work with us and improve things? Trump has been trying to help them in Portland, offered to send federal troops to assist, and in fact did at one point, remember? Sent federal agents in to protect the courthouse in Portland because the city either could not, would not, or just didn't have the manpower to do it anyway if they wanted to, and the state wasn't doing anything. He agreed to take them out when the state governor decided, okay, we will go ahead and send in some state troopers to stand around the courthouse and protect it. But I love the remark of the Portland mayor. We got the message. You should have gotten the message the first night that fires were set, looting was taking place, widespread violence against law enforcement officers. What the hell do you have to say to realize you got a problem? And you know why they're reacting now? They're reacting now because the polls are showing Trump is making big gains on this issue of violence in the streets. I told you previously, I thought this would be one of the big issues this time around for the election. Yeah, we were looking at COVID. We're looking at the economy and what's happening with the economy. But when you continue to have violence in our streets night after night, 90-plus nights now in Portland, again this weekend, then you would think that, all right, I guess we need to get something done. And yet, you've got the Wisconsin governor telling Trump not to visit Kenosha, Wisconsin, saying, we don't want you here. And yet the president sent word first to Kenosha, see you on Tuesday, doubling down on his plan to go to Kenosha, Wisconsin tomorrow, despite the Wisconsin governor saying, we don't want you here. Of course, Kenosha is where Jacob Blake, a black man, was shot several times in the back by a police officer. That led to widespread protests that turned to riots, looting and arson again. Portland is a mess, President Trump says. It has been that way for many years. If this joke of a mayor doesn't clean it up, we'll go in and do it for them, speaking then about Portland. And, of course, we had a death over the weekend in these cities as some of this violence got out of control. In the beginning, it was not clear who was shot. Now we're told that it might have been a member of a Trump support group. That's what we're hearing. And, of course, now you got the left saying, well, he was shot and killed because he was there creating violence. Well, I'm still waiting on all the details on that, just like I am on all of these. I'm going to wait. But I will ask you this, a very direct question. Well, first of all, before I leave the Portland issue, all I can say is that the Times, the New York Times, has tried to deal with this story and reference the shooting in Portland and say that originally you had a pro-Trump, pro-police caravan going through the city Saturday, that's in Portland, clashing with counter-protesters at times, people shooting paintball guns from trucks in the caravan, protesters throwing objects at them, the man who died, a gunshot wound to the chest, not identified, but wearing a hat with insignia, Patriot Prayer, a local far-right group. But then here comes the Portland mayor, because of the death of that guy, said, see, it's you who created the hate and this division, President Trump. My question to you again, very simple question. Where is Black Lives Matter? We had a black American killed in St. Louis over the weekend, shot in the head. Where is Black Lives Matter? Oh, this black American leaves a family with three children. Where are the protesters? Oh, that's right. This black American was a St. Louis police officer responding to a barricade situation, shot in the head, a police officer shot to death. Nothing there for Black Lives Matter to see because it was a police officer, even a black police officer shot. We got a lot to cover the next 2 hours. Believe me, you do not want to miss it. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
So are you ready to get out from the COVID-19 scare? We might still need to be careful in some areas. I do encourage businesses to make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And, of course, if you open up and then a client or an employee or someone else surfaces with COVID-19, you need to reevaluate what's going on. I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. They can determine at a very reasonable cost what you need to do before you open, once you are open, and as you move forward. It just makes good sense, doesn't it? Wellington Environmental, for 30 years, has been treating situations at hospitals, schools, daycare centers, private homes. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Be well with Wellington Environmental. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Taught me those things a young man should know. Down on my knees and begging, I plead to learn a little bit more. All that woman taught me to pray. I saw heaven every day. All she could do.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
This is an administration that actually has real results coming into the community. A lot of people don't talk about the fact that the criminal justice reform is something that many black Americans thought President Obama would tackle. He failed to do that. He didn't even attempt to do it. President Trump, he's also doing much more with the opportunity zones. He's hit $75 billion thus far. He's going to do even more in these communities and neighborhoods that Democrats left to decay. And some of those neighborhoods are right there in Baltimore City. So people see results when it comes to President Trump. We're done with the pandering. We saw many major cities paint Black Lives Matter on the streets. You know, we don't want just paint on the streets. We want careers, we want opportunity, and we want equality. And I think people are understanding that you get that from President Trump rather than what we had in the past.
Those are the words of Kimberly Klasick, a rising star in the Republican Party. You saw her on the final night of the Republican National Convention. She's the young black woman running for the U.S. House seat in Baltimore, previously held by the late Congressman Elijah Cummings. It's a Democrat stronghold. Her chances of winning, not likely. But she's rocking the boat right now. And as she pointed out in a video she had for a campaign that went viral, you can also find that at Larry Connors USA Facebook. It's still posted. Talking about how bad her city was, Baltimore in particular, said if you want to see how bad it is and what we need in our city and what we're not getting from the Democrats after decades of leadership, walk with me through Baltimore. And it caught fire. And again, that also brought her to the attention to the Republicans and said, we need this woman to speak at the Republican National Convention, which she did. And she pretty much expressed what you heard then in an interview she did Sunday with Maria Bartiromo on Sunday Morning Futures on Fox. And she said the Trump message is resonating with black voters. Trump, in originally running against Hillary, had said to the blacks of America, he said, why not vote for me? What do you got to lose? You've gotten nothing from these Democrats all these years. Why not vote for me? What do you got to lose? Well, 8% of them did vote for him. And the numbers are rapidly accelerating that maybe more black Americans will be voting for him this time around. One of my guests, Dr. Gerard Lamero, who does model forecasting, who had predicted in 2016, when Trump was still one of, 15-plus GOP candidates running, and at that time was not my first, second, or even third choice, Dr. Lamero said he's going to win the Republican primary. He'll come out of the convention with it. Yeah, I found that hard to believe. And then after the convention, Trump came out. And also in Feb 2016, Dr. Lamero said Trump will end up winning the election against Hillary. Again, I found that hard to believe. And I believed maybe it would happen after Trump had the Republican banner, but all the polls were saying there's no way, there's no way. And yet he did. Now, of course, you're going to rush back and say, well, he didn't win the popular vote. He won the Electoral College vote. That's the game. That's how we play the game. And the Democrats were counting on that anyway, thinking we have a big blue wall of these states that Trump cannot collect for the Electoral College. He'll never get over it. He didn't go over it. He blew it apart. So here's what's happened since the Republican National Convention in general. Let me give you general numbers first. Now, again, you can take these numbers for what you want. You can argue them back and forth. And by the way, a little bit later in this hour, I'm going to be joined by Dr. Joseph Campbell. He's a professor at the School of Communication, American University. He has out a book and now a piece taken from it called Lost in a Gallup, The Polling Failure of U.S. Presidential Elections. And he's talking specifically not just the polling failure, but the communication and how they're transmitted and fed to and interpreted and digested and sometimes spit out falsely by the media. That's coming up a little bit later in this hour. But one of the new polls out, a Democracy Institute Sunday Express poll, shows that President Trump, leading Democrat presidential nominee, Joe Biden, 48% to 45%. A significant bump following last week's RNC convention, a 3-point lead in the national popular vote, a 7-point lead in key battleground states. Like I say, you can take that for whatever you want. I always tell you, I don't care if it shows Trump winning by 99%. What counts is the poll on November, on Election Day. But just want to share that with you. But let's look back to this issue about what Kimberly Klasick was pushing, that Donald Trump has actually addressed issues black Americans wanted, and Obama had 8 years and did not do it. In 8 years, Obama did not push for prison reform, which Trump did in his not quite 4 years now, push for prison reform that freed a lot of Americans, many minority Americans, from jail cells because they were in prison with onerous penalties for crimes that were not that big of a deal. And they were set free. Now, some of them might not should have been set free, but they were because they were maybe serving something like a life sentence for possession of marijuana. And she also points out how Trump has made the effort to reinvest in the communities, putting money back in the infrastructure. And Obama did not really do that in 8 years. Well, he talked about doing something like that and then kind of joked when it didn't show up. So, well, we're not quite shovel ready yet. Remember that joke? And she also pointed out that Trump is the one who said to the historically black university colleges and universities, you don't have to come begging for money anymore. We'll put one of your people inside the White House so they can help you get money as you need it. Obama didn't do that either, not in 8 years. And here's what a Hill-Harris poll shows regarding President Trump's approval rating with registered black voters prior to the Republican convention. August 8th to the 11th, prior to the Republican convention, he was getting a 15% approval, almost double what he picked up in 2016. Since the election, the convention, I should say, and taking over that period of time, August 22nd through the 25th, Trump's approval rating with registered black voters, not just black Americans, but registered black voters, going from a 15% approval rating to 24% rating. That's not a fluke. Obviously, it is resonating. But the left has got to do what it can to dismiss all of this, to destroy it. And in fact, I'm looking at a piece from CNN. Now, I just read you those two polls. And you can find polls to fit anything you want. And if you want to listen to a CNN poll, you'd like this headline. Trump is still in trouble in the first post-convention polling, saying that Trump wanted a large bounce coming out of the RNC. The early evidence is he did not receive one. Now, where are they getting their information? This is a new ABC News Ipsos poll and found that it was especially harsh for Trump. It says it did not poll the horse race. It polled the candidates' favorability ratings. And Trump's favorability rating stood at 32%. And after the Republican National Convention, at 31%. And it said Biden's favorable rating was 45%. But after the conventions, it was 46%. Do what you want with that. It's a point difference. Is that really that big of a deal? But the headline is, Trump's still in trouble in post-convention polling. But here's the other thing, and this is the sad thing in America. Well, you've got all of these on the left calling and labeling Trump a racist continuously, and thereby labeling black Americans who come out in public and support him either Uncle Toms or slurring them, slandering them. Herschel Walker, former NFL football player, Heisman Trophy winner, he had come out and said, I'm for Donald Trump, and he has since said, I have lost a lot of friends. I lost a lot of friends because I said I'm for Trump. And that's a shame. That has to hurt. I mean, I have relatives, dear relatives, a sister, in fact, who is anti-Trump in every way. She's for Hillary. She's certainly going to be for Biden. I'm not going to lose my relationship with my sister over a political difference. It ain't going to happen. A friend is a friend or not. A relative, you can decide you want to walk away or not, even though it's your blood. I choose to say even friends, folks I count as close friends, or anti-Trump, again, I'm not going to lose a friendship over that. We'll have our differences. If they want to talk about it, and if they can talk about it realistically without getting belligerent, then we'll have a conversation. But most of them can't. Most of them can't because they don't really have a lot of material to back them up. So I'll just don't have the discussion with them. I love my sister. I love these friends. I'm not going to lose either over an election and a candidate. Just not going to happen. And I pray you do the same thing. The years down the road, all of this will be done, one way or the other. But here's what's happening among black Americans in particular, how they're being insulted. On MSNBC, Tiffany Cross was filling in for Joy Reid on her Sunday show. And she was talking about the Republican National Convention featuring several black speakers, which indeed it did. And she began her report saying, this was not a Saturday Night Live sketch. She said, I watched the Republican convention and seeing the slew of black speakers that they had, it really did look like a modern day minstrel show to me. a minstrel show. You know what she's referring to? Minstrel shows were those in which people wore blackface to imitate African Americans in song and dance numbers and variety acts. Al Jolson, one of the biggest that did it. And, of course, we've had the governor of Virginia do it as well. But he got a pass because he's a Democrat. He did it in the past, and they caught pictures of him in some annual. And he said, well, it wasn't me. And they made, well, I guess I did do it, but, I'm sorry now. I'm woke. I'm sorry. Well, that's okay by me. I don't care if you made a mistake. But they would never allow the other side to do it. And here came also this same woman blasting Senator Tim Scott and football great Herschel Walker, again, as minstrels, indicating they're just pretending to be black Americans. Ladies and gentlemen, that is so close to Joe Biden telling a black radio host that if you ain't decided by now you're going to support me, then you ain't black. So that's what they're telling Herschel Walker and Senator Tim Scott. You ain't black because you're not supporting Biden. You want to tell them they did not grow up as black people in black families and also deal with the issues as black Americans throughout these decades, and now they ain't black, they're white people with blackface, calling them puppets? That does us no good in the nation. It just adds to racial division. Why couldn't they simply accept we need to do something in our party? We're losing them. We obviously have not been doing what we should. But why slander them and attack them? Because that's the only game they know. Pull the race card. We'll be back.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Baltimore City, we've been under Democrat leadership for over 50 years. And unfortunately, we have gotten nothing in return. We have the homeless problem is terrible. We have a 20% poverty rate.
Yeah.
We had the riots back in 2015, and we still have same problems.
The words of Kimberly Klasick again on Sunday Morning Futures yesterday about the problems in Baltimore. She mentioned the riots, the crime, extensive crime and rioting in Baltimore. And, of course, it was another deadly weekend in Chicago. At least 46 shot Friday into Sunday night. At least 46. Another report says 47. One report says 9 dead. Another says 10 dead. And it includes 2 officers shot and wounded by a suspect trying to resist arrest. And in Chicago, as I said, in one of them, it was a shooting at a pancake house. 2 in the afternoon on the city's south side. Folks are outside eating under a tent. Someone drives by, opens fire, trying to kill one guy, ends up shooting 5 others. Kenosha, look what's happening in these cities of these riots and so forth. Kenosha, 175 arrests so far. And 102 of them, according to police, had addresses listed outside Kenosha. Now, that doesn't say if all of them were the Antifa or BLM people or they were members of a Patriot group, a Trump group, whatever. But we do see a statement coming out of Kenosha where one of them, under a Justice for Jacob rally, the black man who was shot 7 times in the back by the police officer. Now, I'm going to even get into all the details right now. If you don't know it, you need to catch up. But the statement was, if you kill one of ours, it's time for us to kill one of yours. And then in St. Louis City, we had police responding to a threat to a family. And they arrived, 2 officers hit, 1 in the leg, 1 in the head. The one in the head dying over the weekend. Leaving behind a family, wife, 3 children. A black police officer. Serving his community. And I don't see one damn thing from Black Lives Matter protesting the death of this police officer who was trying to protect others. And yet look at the violence that continues across the other parts of the nation. And the attitude from the left. Senator Klobuchar, we are not safe in Trump's America. Adam Schiff claiming Trump is fanning the flames of violence. You see what's going on. And again, even a Biden campaign advisor saying Trump has been trying to incite violence this entire summer. We're going to get into that in more detail in the next hour. I'll also tell you coming up in the next hour, you want to make sure you stick around for this. I've got an interview set up with Gordon Chain, member of the Heritage Foundation, but also does some extensive research on things. He has an article titled, How China Plans to Smear Donald Trump in 2020. How China Plans to Smear Trump in 2020. We'll have that for you. We'll take a short break now, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Dr. Joseph Campbell. His look at the polling failure of presidential elections. And not even just the polling issue, but how the media ends up interpreting it and feeding it to you. Please stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
So earlier I was telling you how one poll, the Hill-Harris, says that Trump's approval rating with registered black voters went from 15% August 8th through 11th to 24% approval rating August 22nd through 25. A CNN headline reads that Trump's still in trouble in the post-convention polling. It is hard to understand, isn't it? And it's hard to decide, do you believe this one or do you believe that one? And maybe more so, do you believe the news source you're relying on? Joining us now, glad to have him on board, Dr. Joseph Campbell, professor of School of Communication at American University. Dr. Campbell, glad to have you on board, sir.
Thank you, sir. Nice to be with you.
I was looking at a piece you wrote for The Hill titled, Why Polling Failure is Often Journalistic Failure, and let me read the first paragraph for the audience. It's axiomatic that the pre-election polls set the narratives for U.S. presidential campaigns. As we've seen this year, polls are central to shaping conventional wisdom about the competitiveness of the races. But when polls misfire, journalism can falter too, leaving the news-consuming public feeling misled, ill-served, even a bit contentious. And I certainly think you're right. Go ahead, sir.
Well, absolutely, yes. Polls can fail, and polls this far out from a general election can be really, really problematic. They are not prophecies. I think it's a mistake to consider polls more than 2 months before an election or even a month before an election to be prophecies. And so I think we have to treat them very warily, recognizing that they do have a checkered past, at least at the presidential election level, and also to be wary about them a little bit, not to ignore them completely, but to keep in mind that they have problems, internal problems.
I always try to tell my audience, you know, if you're going to buy this one, then you're going to have to buy all of them. In other words, you better weigh them equally at this point. You agree?
I agree. And some polls are recognized as better than others, that their methodologies are more acceptable than others. And Nate Silver of the prediction site 538.com ranks pollsters. There's like 400 different pollsters that he gives grades of A to F to. And while his grading system is not infallible necessarily, it's not a bad resource to consult from time to time about polls and pollsters and how they do their work, because every one of them does it a little differently, and there is no single gold standard for polling anymore. It used to be random digit dial telephone calls with live operators. But because response rates have dropped so to such low levels, pollsters are looking for other options and other ways
And most don't have landlines anyway.
And landlines are disappearing, that is for sure.
Well, you
they
mean,
do,
go ahead. You
they
mean,
do reach cell phone users, and so they're able to get to a fairly wide number of people, but the response rate is pretty low. It's in the single digits for many of these telephone-based polls.
You know, the New York Times Morning Report was quoting Nate Cohn. You were talking about Nate Silverman, but Nate Cohn talking about how, you know, were they looking for Trump bounce, one poll, two polls, Morning Consult, Yahoo said Biden's lead over Trump shrunk modestly, 6 percentage points in both, they say. ABC News Ipsos poll found no change. Nate Cohn says that Trump has a serious chance to win re-election, but also says, just like you did, one, post-convention polling bounces usually fade, but the other point being, they're often messy immediately after the convention. You'd be wise to wait till after Labor Day. So anything going forward past Labor Day would be more acceptable, or just misinterpreted again?
You know, I think we have to wait even later than that, later in the campaign, toward late October. Then we begin to get a good sense of how accurate the polls are going to be. I mean, we get a broad sense before then, but polls don't become prophecies, really, until right before the election. And sometimes pollsters don't even continue to poll right up until the weekend before the election.
And in fact, Gallup pulled out last year, didn't they? They finally decided this race between Clinton and Hillary, we're not even going to bother polling that anymore.
That's right. They stopped presidential election polling after the 2012 election when they projected that Mitt Romney, or estimated that Mitt Romney, had a one-point lead over Obama at the close. And, of course, Obama won by nearly 4 points. So it was a five-point miss by Gallup, and they have not returned to presidential election polling since then.
Now, you also point out that one of the biggest polling failures in more than 70 years was involving a man from Missouri.
That's absolutely right. And that's it was an epic polling failure. You're talking about the 1948 Dewey defeats Truman election. And it got the name from the headline in the Chicago Tribune, in an early edition of the Chicago Tribune the day after the election, that proclaimed Dewey defeats Truman. And it was at the St. Louis Union Station where Harry Truman was given a copy of the Chicago Tribune, and he held it aloft, sort of mugging for the cameras. And that photograph has become the most iconic, I think, of all presidential election photographs.
And what does it say also, as you were pointing out, since you're dealing with, as a professor of communications at American University, reporters and journalists, even if they're trying to do an effective job and trying to be accurate,
you know, the polling numbers look so certain, and they project this sense of accuracy, of certitude, that they're very beguiling for journalists, because journalists deal in ambiguity all the time. And these are hard, cold numbers, and they look like they're derived from pretty good statistical methodology. So it's not surprising that journalists would find polls and polling numbers to be quite appealing. And after all, everybody wants to know, who's ahead? What's the state of the election as it looks like now? And that's a further reason for journalists to be enamored with polling and polls.
Well, it's also,
in fact, many news organizations do their own polls.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to say, between them doing their own polls, we know the campaigns do their own polls, and they build their campaign strategy and where to go and where we need to go based on their polls, or do they build them more on these national polls or the media polls? Or, I mean, when you're trying to throw money somewhere where it's going to be effective, what are they relying on?
It has to be both. It has to be both private internal polling, and they cannot ignore, a campaign cannot ignore the public polls that are coming out. And I think that they will take those into consideration, too, as to whether a state, let's say, is in play or not. And they'll make determinations along those lines using whatever information they have, including public polls.
I want to go back to, of course, you also mentioned that how things went upside down when the Carter polling with Reagan was, as you said, an eyelash-close race. Even CBS News said that. Gallup poll gave Reagan a single-point lead, and yet Reagan won by near landslide by almost 10 percentage points. But
right,
even more recent, as we're talking about Clinton and Trump in the first time around, you point out that Clinton's probability of victory was 98.2% from HuffPost, that you could easily hold on to Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. And the days after that, HuffPost polling director wrote, the problem was I placed way too much faith in polls.
It's a recurring theme, isn't it? Not every election has a polling failure of some magnitude, but it happens often enough that we kind of receive see these recurring factors, these recurring aspects of polling and how the journalists interpret them. And 2016 was an example. The one that you mentioned just now of Huffington Post, I mean, they were very confident. Their poll-based statistical model was very confident about Hillary Clinton defeating Donald Trump. And I think the pre-election article said that Donald Trump has essentially no path to an electoral college victory.
Right, right.
But, of course, he did. He ran the table in all the swing states, essentially, and had a clear path to an electoral college.
And that was something that I have continuously pointed out to this audience, and the Hillary campaign, once they lost, started saying, well, we won the popular vote. Get rid of the electoral college. In the beginning, they thought Trump might win the popular vote, but they were sure that blue wall of states for the Electoral College, he could not break through those very same states that he was going to need, and therefore they would hold steady, and it all blew apart.
You're right. It looked like Wisconsin, Michigan,
Pennsylvania,
maybe
North
even North Carolina, were all going to be for Hillary Clinton. And you talk about eyelash close outcomes. Trump won Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin by very narrow margins, but nonetheless he won them. And he came close in Minnesota, and he came close in New Hampshire as well. He was on the verge of even a larger electoral college victory, if you look at the data pretty closely.
When you look at dealing with reporters, training young people to go into this business, and they're going to be at some point dealing with either local elections and our polling and our national, you refer in your article to the Committee of Concerned Journalists, now defunct, that pointed out simply, cover voters, not polls.
That's right. It's another recurring feature, I think, of election coverage is that sometimes journalists are advised not to pay close attention to the polls. But as I mentioned earlier, the polling numbers are so beguiling and so seemingly sound and accurate that it's hard to resist that. And I don't think it's a wise move for journalists to ignore polls. But I do think it's important to place them in their proper perspective and to try not to build campaign narratives around polls and polling numbers. And we've already seen in this election cycle, in this summer, how narratives can change, media narratives can change very quickly.
Very rapidly.
What, 2 months ago, we had Joe Biden in a runaway that didn't look like Trump would be able to overcome his lead.
Well, Dr. Campbell,
it looked a lot closer today than it did.
Dr. Campbell, in one answer, if you will, are you willing to say which poll is right, Trump or Biden right now? One answer, yes. Either anything good?
Well, I think the race is a lot closer.
Okay, that's all I've got time for. I just want to make sure I got that from you, and I do appreciate your time. Would like to have you back in the future, sir.
Absolutely. I'd love to.
We'll
Thanks for having me on today.
Dr. Joseph Campbell. Be right back.
Oh, baby, when you talk like that, you make a woman go mad. So be wise and keep on reading the signs of my body. I'm on tonight, you know my hopes don't lie.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
The members of the House and the Senate Intelligence Committee are going to continue to receive the kind of in-person briefings we receive on every topic that is relevant to the intelligence community's work. What he's not going to continue, what he doesn't have to continue, what he did at the request of congressional leaders is in-person briefings for all 535 members of Congress. Mm-hmm. That obviously led to leaks of information over the last month. We cannot allow that to continue. Members of Congress who are not on the intelligence committees can go to our leaders and ask for written products from the intelligence community, but the members of the intelligence committees will continue to receive these in-person briefings just like we always do.
Those are the words of Arkansas Republican Senator Cotton. Because you got the left saying, oh my God, they're going to try to cut us out of intel briefings. They're trying to hide stuff from us. This happened. All of this brouhaha, if you want to use that word, broke over the weekend when the director decided, the director of the National Intelligence Division, John Ratcliffe, said, I'm tired of information being leaked, so we're going to do it in a different form. And then Trump reported that was going to happen that way. Trump also added, Director Ratcliffe brought information into the committee and the information leaked. So he wants to do it in a different form because you have leakers on the committee. Obviously, leakers that are doing bad things, probably not even legal to leak, but we'll look into that separately. We have had a sieve when it comes to putting any information in a container inside Congress right now, especially inside the Democrats. Remember information coming out as they were doing all their interview, the so-called Russian collusion, when you had all their speakers being brought forward, and every day a member of the House committee would come out, Democrats, of course, and say, oh, we're getting some good stuff here. Trump is going to be in big trouble. And even some of those testifying couldn't speak specifically, but they're saying, I think another shoe is going to drop. They gave us the impression every day something was going to destroy this administration. But then when everything was forced to be open to the public so we could see it, every one of them testifying said, I've seen nothing. I've seen nothing. And yet it was constantly being leaked to give you the other impression. Adam Schiff got asked the other day on NBC, or rather on a CNN program, about this threat of that the intel being leaked is always coming from the Democrat. Listen to the question and the answer, please.
Have you or any of your staff or other Democrats on the committee leaked classified information?
I haven't. My staff hasn't. I can't speak for what all the members of the committee have done or not done, including a lot of the Republican members. Look, data leaks are always improper and sometimes they're illegal. But, of course, this is a falsehood, yet again, another lie by the president.
A lie by the president. A lie by the president. Well, let's hear what Senator Cotton has to say about those remarks from Adam Schiff.
There's a reason he earned the nickname Shifty Adam Schiff. You'll notice that he takes no responsibility for the members of his own committee. That's not exactly a hallmark of leadership. In fact, he went out of the way to distance himself from members of his committee and other Democrats. And it's also well established, if you just look at the pattern of leaks throughout the investigation into Donald Trump during the Russia collusion hoax, that Adam Schiff has frequently leaked information in the past.
Yeah, and I don't have time to get into all the details right now, but you remember the material coming out, and it was supposedly top secret, and then when questioned directly, Schiff said, well, I can't comment on that. It's classified. And yet he was probably behind the leak, either him directly, member of his committee, or someone to the side he had doing it. You had the FBI director at the time, Comey, leaking information, remember? Sending it to a professor friend of his who found a way to get it to the New York Times? Of course, that's what they've been doing. But you also heard they're still going to get the proper reviews to heads of the committee, as they've always gotten it. They're just not going to give one-on-one briefings to members of Congress if they request it. Good. For both sides. I want to go back to my guest I had on a few moments ago, Dr. Campbell, Joseph Campbell, professor of communication at American University. He's the author of 7 books, one of them titled Lost in a Gallup, Polling Failure of U.S. Presidential Elections. That's kind of what we were taking information from on the interview I did with him and a piece he wrote for Fox News. Again, the book titled Lost in a Gallup, G-A-L-L-U-P, like the polling group, Polling Failure in U.S. Presidential Elections. But again, the interest was not just the polling, but how it's handled by reporters, even legitimate reporters actually trying to do a legitimate job, which so few do right now. All right, coming up in the next hour, of course, we'll begin with news and commentary. And as you know, that section of news and commentary is labeled that way because I don't just read news. I give some comments on it. And I want you to know it's news and commentary. I don't pass it off as straight news. And we're then going to get into this issue of Portland and the president going into some of the areas like Kenosha, Wisconsin, when they say, don't come. And he says, get ready, I'm coming anyway. And all the violence has been happening, and how the effort now is to blame Trump. And also, Gordon Chang will join us before the next hour is up. How China plans to smear Trump in the 2020 election. A lot to cover next hour.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.